Welcome to 40 A&M in 5, a download of 40 A&M LLC, recorded at 10 Eastern on Monday, April 22nd. I'm Chris Bone, and here's a selection of tech sector and related global policy highlights from the past week. On Friday, April 19th, European National Trade Ministers held an informal meeting in Dublin to discuss potential agreement on a European way forward for trade agreement negotiations with the United States. Ireland, which holds the rotating six-month presidency of the EU, aims to secure EU-wide agreement on the start of negotiations at a Group of Eight summit meeting set for June 14th in Northern Ireland. The European Commission and most EU member states seem largely in agreement with this timetable to launch negotiations by the close of June, with an agreement prospectively taking 2 years to conclude. On March 20th, the Obama administration had formally notified Congress of its intent to launch negotiations on what has been termed the Transatlantic Trade and Investment Partnership, or TTIP. This notification by the administration has triggered a 90-day period during which it will consult with Congress on potential negotiations. The expectation on both Atlantic coasts is that an agreement would extend beyond removal of tariffs to include the opening of markets on investment, services, and public procurement, according to remarks made to Euractiv by Irish Jobs and Enterprise Minister John Bruton. An accord would also help to smooth regulatory differences that have impacted EU-US trade in such areas as agriculture, chemicals, pharmaceutical, and automotive sectors. During the same week as the EU announcement, the Atlantic Council and Bertelsmann Foundation released a survey which it conducted of trade policy experts and others familiar with issues relevant to potential negotiations. The report, which is available at acus.org, highlights that the EU-US economic relationship presently represents a combined bilateral trade and investment figure of roughly $4.7 trillion. European Commission forecasts suggest that the EU-US deal, if concluded, could add 0.5% to the EU economy and 0.4% to the US economy by 2027. Of those surveyed in the Council Bertelsmann report, a full 88% expressed optimism that some form of EU-US agreement could be reached, while a clear majority of 55% expressed a belief that a moderate rather than comprehensive agreement is far more likely. According to Pew Research data cited in the Council Bertelsmann report, this level of optimism also compares favorably with American public support of roughly 58%, who see increased trade with the EU as advantageous for the US economy. By a wide margin, participants in the survey see the reduction or elimination of tariffs as the least difficult issue of the items surveyed. Another issue that scored quite high in terms of importance to an eventual agreement is convergence in the process by which regulation is created, and particularly convergence in regulations and standards for manufactured goods. According to the Council Bertelsmann survey, a mid-range agreement that removes tariff barriers, streamlines a number of other divergent regulations, but avoids the most contentious and long-standing points of divergence among EU-US policymakers and trade ministers is the most likely and achievable outcome. The fear is, however, that policymakers could put at center stage persistent differences on such issues as genetically modified foods, data protection requirements, public procurement provisions, and cultural and linguistic quotas. Even though such disputes represent only about 2% of EU-US trade, according to the Council Bertelsmann report, a focus on these narrow differences could preclude any deal, even on the issues where both sides largely already agree. The last issue of cultural and linguistic quotas has been a particular one of contention for the French, and Trade Minister Nicole Bric stated last week that France wants exclusion of cultural items, particularly the audiovisual sector, which employs over a million people in the EU and is worth approximately 17 billion euros per year. If negotiations do commence by late July of this year, on timetable, most agree that an agreement could be reached for implementation by close of 2016. The European Union has delayed a vote on its draft regulation, which is set to reform EU data protection and privacy laws. A final vote was to take place on April 17th in the Civil Liberties, Justice, and Home Affairs Committee of the European Parliament, but will now be prospectively delayed until the 29th or 30th of May. The EU argues that a single data protection law across all of its member states would save businesses approximately 2.3 billion euros per year by removing what it terms fragmentation and costly administrative burdens associated with dealing with diverse existing laws throughout the European Union. This belief was strongly reinforced in remarks on March 11th by European Justice Commissioner Viviane Reding, who said that the expectations of business are for a true digital single market with one law for data protection. The 1995 directive, which was only 12 pages long, has been implemented in 27 countries, where in Germany, for example, the current data protection law is 60 pages in length. Take those 60 pages and multiply them by 27 member states, according to Mrs. Reding, and you'll get an idea of what the term regulatory complexity means in practice. Lord Tom McNally, the United Kingdom's Minister for State and Justice, testified before the UK Parliament Select Committee on Justice back in September 2012 that it was the preference of UK negotiators not to have a regulation, which would be self-implementing in each EU member country, but to renegotiate a new directive. This preference was echoed on March 26, 2013, in London before the Westminster E-Forum, where Lord McNally remarked that a regulation would be too expensive, prescriptive, and not fit for purpose, adding that the UK wants legislation from which UK legislators can craft its own law in a way that does not produce an undue financial burden. Lord McNally added that small and medium-sized enterprises, on the whole, tend to operate within countries and would not otherwise enjoy the benefits of cross-border simplification. Numerous governments and corporations have been lobbying to make amendments to the draft regulation, which was first released for review in January 2012. The U.S. government and various American multinational companies have been particularly active, but none have expressed a desire to date for the regulation to be scrapped so thoroughly. An article on these issues was published by 40ANM5 in January of this year and is available at 40a-m.com. A final agreement on EU privacy reforms is expected by the European Commission by the close of 2013, which, if successful, would mean that an official European law could be published by mid-2014. In intellectual property news last week, U.S. District Court Judge Lewis Stanton granted summary judgment in New York to YouTube, rejecting a theory from Viacom that YouTube had red flag knowledge that made it liable for content uploaded by its users. This latest ruling comes nearly a year after the Second Circuit Court of Appeals in the U.S. reversed Judge Stanton's earlier decision, made in 2012, to dismiss the case. The Digital Millennium Copyright Act grants safe harbors from potential copyright claims to site owners, provided that the sites give copyright owners a way to have infringing content removed, and as long as the site is not complicit in user copyright violations. Viacom had hoped to narrow the scope of the DMCA safe harbors by drawing attention to a part of the law that would find liability where a site owner is willfully blind to violations. The Second Circuit Court of Appeals had ordered that the district court review emails that may have suggested that YouTube executives were willfully blind, but in most recent arguments, Viacom acknowledged that it was unable to identify specific examples of violations of which the YouTube founders should have been aware. Viacom legal arguments attempted to finesse this issue by claiming that it was YouTube's responsibility to prove that they were in fact unaware. But in his decision, Judge Stanton found this to be a misrepresentation of the DMCA's so-called red flag provisions. Viacom is entitled to again appeal the decision to the Second Circuit. The Cyber Intelligence Information Sharing Protection Act, or CISPA, passed the U.S. House of Representatives by a vote of 288-127 on Thursday, April 18th. Congressman Mike Rogers, Republican from Michigan and chairman of the House Intelligence Committee, had introduced the bill, H.R. 624, for the second time in February. In its previous incarnation, CISPA also passed easily in the House, but then died in the Senate under the threat of presidential veto. When CISPA failed to pass the Congress in the fall of 2012, the Obama administration began a concerted effort to develop a stopgap, the limited executive order, to enable the voluntary information sharing among service providers and with government entities of data deemed of a cybersecurity purpose or for the protection of national security. The administration implemented that executive order, number 13636, in February. The administration supports incentivizing industry to share appropriate cybersecurity information by providing the private sector with targeted liability protections, but it remains concerned about the breadth of scope for these provisions. The administration had supported legislation sponsored by Senators Lieberman of Connecticut and Collins of Maine, which would permit the Department of Homeland Security to set security standards for information sharing. The bill reintroduced in the House received several amendments in closed-door committee markup sessions and a few more on the House floor, which Chairman Rogers characterized as changes to provide additional oversight and further limit the bill's definitions and authorized applications. However, one amendment not adopted included a requirement for companies to take steps to strip personal information from data reports, something that an industry representative had said during an earlier CISPA hearing would not be an appreciable burden. On April 16th, the White House threatened a veto of the current draft, stating that the administration remains concerned that the bill does not require private entities to take reasonable steps to remove irrelevant personal information when sending cybersecurity data to the government or other private sector entities, adding that citizens have a right to know that corporations will be held accountable to safeguard personal information adequately. Chairman Rogers drew some criticism at the April 16th hearing of the Intelligence Committee for describing opponents of the legislation as 14-year-olds tweeting from their basements. Opposition has been particularly vocal from privacy groups, including the American Libraries Association and Electronic Frontier Foundation, with the American Civil Liberties Union describing the latest iteration of the House bill as fatally flawed. While a large number of U.S. multinational companies support the House bill, several key internet players remain opposed, including Facebook and Microsoft, which recently rescinded support, and with Google most recently declining to take a position. The Senate is expected to take up its own legislation or a version of the House bill within the coming months. You have been listening to 40 A&M in 5, a production of 40 A&M LLC. For more information, visit 40a-m.com. All stories for this week's podcast were reported by at least two online or print news sources or taken directly from relevant releases. We will be back on Monday, April 29th. Until then, make this week one to remember. Bye for now.